Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and we're also simulcasting on the eSETI Stargate on YouTube, which you can actually interact with myself and the guests and other people. So it's a great venue. There's a lot going on right now out there where the Schumann resonance is off the scale. People are kind of wigging out with all these shifts and changes. It's all part of the program we've been talking about for since 1982, actually, hate to admit it. But, you know, these things are unfolding just as we thought they would. And we're just getting more details around them. So, you know, if you're stuck at home, this is a good time to check out, do your own research into everything you wanted to find out about. My guest tonight is Grant Cameron. He's been researching UFO since 1975. He's been recognized at both the Leeds Conference International Researcher and the UFO Congress Researcher of the Year. He has spent decades watching and chronicling developments around extraterrestrial contact. He's the author of Charlie Red Star. He became involved in ufology in May 1975 with personal sightings of an object which locally became known as Charlie Red Star. The sightings occurred in Carmen, Manitoba, about 25 miles north of the Canada-US border. Hundreds of other people sighted objects at the same time. During a prolonged flap of sightings over the next 18 months, he had many sightings of large objects and small objects in the area. He spent countless days in the area photographing and a series of strange objects and interviewing hundreds of witnesses who were involved. So without any further ado, I want to bring Cameron on the show, Grant on the show, because he's got some great stuff. So welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, James. I appreciate your interest in what I'm doing.
Yeah, I've heard some of your other interviews, and it was right on par with a lot of work we're doing here as well. And I like how you're bringing the consciousness and energy into the ufology, which is very necessary if you're going to get the full picture. But what have you been working on lately?
Well, I'm still doing the consciousness thing. As people know, I started with the UFO thing and basically spent 37 years sort of going nowhere. And then I had the consciousness experience watching Colin Andrews' lecture in 2012. And that sort of flipped everything for me. It came as a noetic encounter experience. And I made a complete shift. I sort of gave up on chasing the government may know what's going on, but they're not going to tell you. And there's a lot of people in the government who may know what's going on. They're not going to tell you. And I got into the idea that I'd basically been told in this sort of noetic experience that consciousness was involved. And then in about 2017, I had a second experience, which was a much more detailed noetic experience. I was walking down a street and I got 24 things that were given to me, one after another. And that sort of just shifted me away from to look at the nature of reality. What are we really talking about here? So that's what I've sort of been doing now. I'm doing a lot with experiencers, because I believe that unless you talk to the people who are interacting with the phenomena, you're basically wasting your time. You might as well, you know, go back to 1947. We're sitting there trying to prove to skeptics that UFOs exist. And it's like, and then maybe because I had the experience where 1975, I was within 500 yards five times. So I was pretty close. So I never went down that road of trying to prove to people that I saw something. I could care less whether you believe it or not. I know what I've known since the day one that this was for real phenomena. And all as you pointed out, I researched in 75 and I went and I interviewed all these people. I thought I'd sort of got the biggest story of all times. And I wrote it up in a manuscript and nobody could care less. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you don't. The one woman said to me, the big publisher said, "Mr. Cameron, you may believe in this kind of stuff. Count me among the unbelievers." I went, wow. It's just like, so all I've really been interested in since 1975, since I had my personal experiences, was what was it that I saw in the sky? And somebody's got to know what's going on here. And I went through, like, I went to the Canadian government first. I went to former president of Penn State University, chased him around for 8 years, trying to get him to talk. And then to the president of the United States. Then I chased around the head scientists, guys for the CIA, all these guys. And in the end, I came to the conclusion that the people who are interacting with the phenomena are the people that know what's going on. So I spent a lot of time dealing with those people, interviewing people. And I've gotten in lately. I've got about six books that are about to come out. And one of them is on contact modalities. based upon what I've learned from different experiencers, I've come to the conclusion that there are different modalities, different ways that you can get into the field. All the information is in the field. And going back to the 2012 idea was that consciousness is primary. Unless people understand that consciousness comes first and matter comes second, it's not going to work, because people have this idea that there's a physical world and there's physical planets out there and there's time and space and all this kind of stuff. And what I was basically told a couple of times basically was, you have to understand that it's sort of like this, you know, sort of like a big hologram, you know, it's all here, it's all now, it's consciousness, it's everything's made out of consciousness. And I started to do a book called Contact Modalities, which should be coming out shortly. And that looks at people who've had near-death experiences, people who've channeled, people who read tarot cards, and I've got about 70 different modalities. And I basically sort of came to the conclusion that all these people are in some way getting into the field, because that's what happened to me. I was walking along the street, my second one, walking along the street, paying no attention to anything, and suddenly I'm in there. And I know it's coming with absolute certainty. This information is coming into my head. And I started to look around, and I realized there was a bunch of other people who were getting in the field as well. Now, a lot of them are getting it through, say, an ET experience or whatever you want to call it. I always call it the intelligence band of phenomena. Because the more I look at it, the more I start to think it's a little more complex than just ETs. And these people are getting stuff. And, you know, some of the surveys show that 40% of experiencers claim at one point during their experience they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And the vast majority of the UFO community wants nothing to do with them. It's anecdotal. You know, they just believe they're having these experiences. And it's like, you know, if there's 40% of people who claim that they know what's, you know, knew everything at one point, why would you not at least talk to them? Give them lie detectors, whatever you got to do, but talk to the people. Why would you ignore these people? So I spent a lot of time, and the thing that sort of excited me the most is I've run across a lot of experiencers now who actually claim that they've been in the spirit world, that the beings have actually taken them inside the spirit world and have shown these bizarre connections between the spirit world, identical things. And I'll give you an example. I have a guy I've interviewed him about 5 or 6 hours, and he had 3 experiences where he was taken into the spirit world, and he talks about his mother in the spirit world taking him to this building. And in the building, it's a little tiny building, like a sort of like a temple thing. And he goes into the building, and he said it's 10 times the size inside the building as it is outside. And he said it was the strangest thing he'd ever seen. And yet you go to Chris Bledsoe, who's a prime ET contact, who told me about flying the craft. I've got 50 people who've flown the craft, and they all say the same thing. So I said to Chris Bledsoe, I said, Chris, how do you fly the craft? He says, well, I go in the craft. He said, I realize it's like 10 times the size inside than it is outside. And I'm going, that sounds familiar. It's the same story. One's in the spirit world, one's in the UFO. So then you start wondering, is it actually a UFO or is it the spirit world? Or are these two things basically all consciousness and it's how you're interpreting it? And the other one was, I'm a big fan of Dr. Michael Newton, who did the whole work on life between lives. He did the 7,000 yeah. regressions, and there's now 35,000 regressions where he takes people in the spirit world. And in there, they talk about being in the spirit world, where they're looking at these books where you look at your past lives and you plan your next lives and stuff like this. And in the book, they open it up and it's a crystal, giant crystal. And Ron Johnson talks about the same thing. His mother in this room takes him to the end of this building, and there's these crystals in the table, and he can see his mother's life. His life won't appear until he dies, but his crystal is in there. He can see his dog's crystal. He can see the whole life. And I'm going, this is the same story. 1988, if you remember back 1988. UFO cover-up live documentary, supposedly a leak from Ronald Reagan into the UFO community. And the Falcon is saying the most impressive thing he saw in all his time working with UFOs was the aliens had this crystal, and they could show the history of the world by looking at the crystal at a certain angle. I'm going, it's the same story. So I'm looking at these connections with these people who are what I call contact modalities. And what you see is these similarities between all these modalities that indicate to me what reality may actually be, and that UFOs is just sort of a very advanced form of reality, that you're starting to pick up the idea that there's no time, there's no space, it's all consciousness, that there are interacting beings and stuff, whereas the materialistic world believes, you know, a random biological robot in a meaningless universe and all this kind of stuff. And I've moved so far out there that I really don't care what anybody thinks. I'm just working on what I'm discovering from talking to experiencers. And I think that's where the answer is.
Yeah, I do too. Well, my years of experience, because I had two near-death experiences.
Yeah.
And that blew me wide open. And then when the shift started appearing to me, I had to incorporate into my spiritual practices, because I was studying with yogis and lamas and things like that. And then, you know, I was waiting for masters to appear to me. And I was having, you know, appearances of masters, even getting photographs of them when they would appear. And then the next thing you know, the ship started appearing. And then finally I had to start incorporating that into my reality.
You know? That's true. Because like the free survey, the Edgar Mitchell survey showed 37% of people have near-death experiences claim they've had a near-death experience. And I remember they wanted to study, they wanted to get a committee going. And I said, well, why do you need a committee? Because one of the things that I got in my noetic experience, the noetic experience says, is the world made out of physical nuts and bolts? If it is, that's one world. But if it's made out of consciousness, that's a different world. If it's one life, that's one world with rules. But if it's multiple lives, all the rules change. And then it was the thing about random. So is it a random world? If it's a random world, then you've got all these different rules. But if it's not random, if it's pattern, then it's a completely different world. And that was the whole thing, where how could 37% of all experiencers have a near-death experience? Like people who claim to be UFO people have this, and they couldn't figure this out. Like, how could this possibly be? And I say, because you're making the false assumption, you're assuming it's a random world, that both events are random. Maybe both events are planned, that you actually came in on a soul contract or whatever you want to call it, and that these aren't random events. And that, so a lot of times like right now I'm into light language. I've run up against, and you get these synchronicities where all these people come up with these light language things. And the one guy, and so I say to him, I say, he's supposed to be one of the foremost authorities in the world. He's in Singapore. And I said to him, I said, so how did you get in this light language thing? And he said, I was 6 years old. I got hit by a car. I go, it's the same story every time, you know. And it's like, and that's where I have the contact modality. So it may be high psychedelics. It may be a head injury. It may be a high fever. It may be get hit by a car. And there's always this sort of event that pops people, almost like it rips the veil. And is it a random event? I don't think it's a random event, that you plan this in order to wake yourself up and to get into the field. And that's the people you got to watch, is the people who've had the near-death experiences. And why would you not talk to them if they claim they've been in the field and they can tell you what's going on? Because you, as you know, once you get in the field, you talk to people who have near-death experiences, they're all basically saying the same thing. And that's where you got to go. If you want to understand reality, you got to talk to these people rather than most people go into science. But my impression of science these days is that it's like almost like a religion. It's scientific, religious superstitions. It's like, you know, the world's made out of physical, and, you know, at the time of Einstein, we'd say, we know we've got it all duplicated and all the evidence is there. But you got to remember, at the time when Einstein developed the theory of relativity and Heisenberg with the uncertainty principle and Bohr with the quantum atom, the belief in science was there was only one galaxy. And people will always say, you know, these channelers and these people who've got these talking to aliens, they're so far off. I mean, it's just garbage, whatever. I said, how much more can you get off? Because now we believe there's 2 trillion galaxies. I mean, from 1 to 2 trillion, tell me any channeler or any person who's having UFO experiences who's that far off from 1 to 2 trillion. And I start to realize that the people just buy into the worldview, and that if you want to know the real worldview, you've got to talk to people who are having these enlightenment experiences who are in the field. So I'm going through all these different things, and I'm showing the patterns of all these people through different modalities who've gotten in the field and basically, as I see, are bringing the same sort of material back. And then you get what you're talking about with like ancient teachings, that the teachings of the East 4,000 or 5,000 years ago are going to be right. Or the shamans of North America, these people from many years ago, they're going to turn out to be absolutely right. And that's because they had a modality, whether it was meditation that put them in the field, whether it was picking up a magic mushroom and they were suddenly in the field. That was true information that has always been rejected by the scientific community, that will end up being the way the world actually works.
Yeah, I know. I've had some conversations with people that, you know, have PhDs and things like that. And you know, they want to get in an argument. And I always tell them, I said, well, you believe minimum, you know, that there's at least 11 dimensions out there. And you think about all the life in this third dimension. Now you've got at least 11 more dimensions out there. And like you're saying, there's trillions of galaxies out there, you know, and then you add the dimensions to that. It's so vast. It's so beyond imagination. And they want to tell you that there's no life out there, that UFOs don't exist and there aren't any advanced civilizations. And yeah. And they run that program. And then they want you to prove it with physical.
Yeah,
they want
yeah,
to prove
exactly.
non-physical events with physical, and which we do. We have the gear to do that. You know, we have infrared goggles. We have infrared spotlights where you can light up the fourth dimension. We can do all kinds of crazy stuff to, yeah, to actually yeah. prove that these things exist. And we've also proven that the consciousness connection, because we'll tell them ahead of time there's going to be a ship and it's going to come in at 10 o'clock and it'll be in the east. Have your cameras rolling. And they have their cameras rolling. The ship appears, powers up, puts on a major display. They get it. And we've done that redundantly here, but we're still, no matter how much, you know, there's this, I think this COVID virus thing, I think the cognitive dissonance is a much worse virus going around that seems like everybody's.
Yeah. Well, looking back on my life, you always see the patterns in your life when you look back. And one of the big experiences I had that when I look back was one of the best experiences I ever had. I actually worked as a bartender at the faculty club at the University of Manitoba for a number of years. And I remember when I first went in there, the guy who was teaching me had two PhDs. He was getting a second PhD. He was going to work on nuclear submarines to get the propeller so it didn't make so much noise or whatever. And I remember him telling me, he said, I'll let you know, don't get intimidated by these guys because you got deans, you got, you know, PhDs and guys who think PhDs and stuff. And he said, when they've had one too many drinks, they're just like any other drunk on the street. And when I worked with these professors and deans and presidents of universities and stuff like that for a number of years, I realized they're no different than anybody else. And just because you've got a PhD in chemistry, in some little aspect of chemistry, they think they know everything. And yet I knew a guy who was had a PhD in civil engineering who couldn't fix his tap. And that's the whole thing. People don't realize that these guys have a very limited, and I remember the guy who was the dean of plant science used to come and argue with me all the time. I mean, he would just sit there and drink and smoke all night, and he wanted to just have a discussion. And he was arguing with me. And one time I said to him, what do you know about UFOs? You know about roses. You're a dean of plant science. You know nothing about UFOs. And that was the big lesson that I learned, that I don't get intimidated because some guy's got a PhD. What have you got a PhD in? How much do you know? The people who have got the experiences who are, you know, whether they're, you know, experiencers or whatever, they have the PhD in that specific aspect. Just because you've got a PhD in chemistry doesn't mean you know anything about consciousness or reality and that sort of thing. And so looking back on my life, I've seen that vast majority of my life I don't think is random. I see patterns. Even the idea where I first got started, because when I first got started, I see these synchronicities that I didn't really realize for 40 years where when I first, this thing started in this town, I remember they had the UFO scene, and I said to my friend, let's go. I had no interest in UFOs, nothing whatsoever. I'd done a study on near-death experiences, which is where I'm coming back to now, the whole thing about the connection to death and stuff. But I had no interest in UFOs, and so we were going to go, but we didn't go. And then the local TV crew got this thing on the ground and jumped off the ground, and they caught it on the ground. And I remember interviewing the guy who was running the camera, and they had almost got it the night before. And he said, I mean, we knew you had to get something on the camera, he said. So I was sitting there, and I was looking through the viewfinder, watching this thing down the road, and it was sitting on the road, and it was glowing up, it was glowing down, it was glowing up. And he said, the next time it glows up, I'm going to try to get something on camera. And it was almost like the UFO said, are you ready to go? And he pushed the thing, and the thing jumped up in the air, and it became this viral film that went around the world. And then I said to my friend, come on, let's go. And then when I'm interviewing him 2 years later, when I'm doing the book, I'm thinking to myself, that wasn't random. He actually, it was almost like it was planned, and they needed me to go out there. And so I start seeing the world that way in terms of when I run into people or when I see these events, especially when people talk about their events, I always look at it like, is this a soul contract? Are you a part of coming in to, all you and I have a meeting before we're born, and we say, okay, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this, and we all get together, we're going to raise consciousness, whatever we're doing. And I see the world much more in that sense. Whereas the vast majority of scientists will say it's just random. Like if you've got a cell that divides into a second cell, then that cell's never made a cell. But in 16 hours, it will put 100 trillion atoms together to build a second cell. And that cell will be able to duplicate itself. And you're going like, and you think that's happening by accident? That finds 100 trillion cells, puts them all in three-dimensional spots in 16 hours. And you start looking at the scientific world, and they're the high priests because they can build a cell phone. But just because you can build a cell phone doesn't mean you get everything right. You can, in the 14th century, people were building cathedrals with 150-foot ceilings. It didn't mean that the world was flat just because you could build a 150-foot ceiling. And people are making these fault equations where they're putting scientists as these very high guys that we've got to listen to, and everybody's trying to appease them. Everybody's trying to, like, you'll see a lot of conferences where they'll bring in guys with PhDs who don't know anything about UFOs, who just have some idea and they're skeptical or whatever, and they'll bring them in because everybody doesn't want to be the Rodney Dangerfield. We don't want to be people laughing at us. So we sort of appease the scientists. We try to make them happy and try to go down their road. To me, it's not. I listen to the people who are having the experiences, and the way I look at it is, how far is that person in the field? In fact, I'm actually doing an experiment. I don't know if you know Jay-Z Knight. Jay-Z Knight did this experiment, and we're at the verge of duplicating this, but Jay-Z Knight does this experiment where she's doing Ramtha. So she's channeling. So they take her DNA when she's ordinary, then they take her DNA when she's channeling. And of course the DNA is completely different. One is male, one's female. And so I said, everybody said, she's faking it, she's whatever. I said, what if she's not? What if this is true, that the DNA will actually change when you get a trans channeler or a trans medium or something like that? And because of the COVID virus, we were going to do it June 19th. We have the top physical medium in the world that was going to do it. And we know from, like, studies of people who have dissociative identity disorder or multiple personality, people, their eye color will actually change when the altar comes in. And this is his whole idea. And if that comes down to be true, that your consciousness is based upon, or your DNA is based upon your consciousness, and when the consciousness changes, when you get a walk-in come in, the DNA will change, the whole world flips upside down. Then people got to really start to wonder, like, what the heck's really going on? And that's where I come into this idea that it's all consciousness, everything's made out of consciousness, and that has to be the bottom line. And a lot of quantum physics is now looking at that. Is consciousness primary, and is matter secondary? Whereas the vast majority of scientists will say, you know, physical is, and all consciousness is an epiphenomena that's coming off of matter, which is totally wrong.
Yeah, I know you're talking about it. I was thinking about it before. You were kind of on the same page when you're talking about the personality disorders, and you see people that they'll have like a life-threatening disease, and they shift into another personality, and it's gone.
Yeah,
and their eyes will change, you know, and they'll have marks on them, and it's just crazy, how that happens. I definitely, you know, believe in that, because I've seen it actually in my practices. I've seen a lot of that happen. Yeah.
That gives a lot of validation, for mediums and people, like physical mediums and people that are doing stuff like that. It basically likes a certificate. You have to produce the pattern. It's almost like we now know with MRIs, because I do in my contact modalities, I do a lot on MRIs, on people who are channeling. And they did people channeling, they did mediums, they did people praying, they did all this thing. They put them in MRI machines, and they have a brain pattern. So it's not like the person's faking it. So we can actually now duplicate it. And if we can get this DNA test that actually works, it's on paper. Like, how are you going to argue that? I mean, you can go and duplicate it all you want. People are saying you got to do it right in, you know, controlled conditions. I said, I don't have to do it right. All I got to do is put a second test out, and everybody's going to scramble to do that test. And they, because I don't have the money to do all the real heavy stuff. And I just want to get a second one. And I always say that within next year, I'll have one. I have a spirit painter in Great Britain that can paint two paintings at the same time with dead people coming in. And she's agreed to do the test. So I've got these people. It's a matter of getting the DNA testing, getting them under trance and stuff. And the trance thing is the whole idea, is that you move into that alternate reality and you pull the material, whether you're meditating or whatever you're doing, you're going into that alternate reality where the information is correct, almost like memory. People say, oh, memory is no good. And yet you get people with, very superior autobiographical memory. People that have had like head injuries or something where they're 10 years old, they can remember every single moment of every single day, and they've been tested as to what did they have for lunch, what did they have for dinner, who was on, what was the weather like, what, and this sort of thing. And there's 100 of these people have been tested, or the Rain Man, the famous Rain Man, who had 12,000 books, and he can tell you what was on every single page in every single book. So memory is perfect. And that's the idea. So if you get into the field, whether it's a head injury or whatever it is, the material is very accurate in the field. So I try to stay away from rational analytical thought, the left brain, because the left brain is making up a lot of stuff, and try to get in the field and pull it down, whether you're pulling it down through masters, through meditation, however you're doing it. The information's in the field, and the farther you can get out of the field, the more you can dissociate from the left brain, the better your information is going to be.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of HIP technology or Harold Oldfield's technology?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. But you can film. They came up here and they filmed sessions that I was doing. And what I would say is, like, you know, I'd say, look, the whole room is filling with pink energy. It's Mary's energy coming in. And they would film it and they would see all the pink energy coming in and coalescing. And the next one, I'd say, this is the golden beings, you know, these golden goddess type energies are coming in. And they've done that several times. And they've gotten the exact, when I would say what's happening, they would film it and the whole room would be gold.
Wow.
And then the Palladians would come in and the room would white out. It would totally white out the room. And so every time, and I would talk about the feline beings, I know you've had some research into that.
Yep.
And they came in, it would turn like green and gold, like gold and green energy together. And then I started learning that all these different beings came on different rays or frequencies, and you can actually measure it. You can actually film the frequencies when they come in, and you see them come in and you see the people's bodies pixelate into light. And it's just amazing watching. We have it on our website.
Yeah. You know, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, but that's another thing you can do is get them on the HIP technology when they're doing their thing and see how their auras change, you know, the energy fields around them, how they change.
Yeah, that's the thing is you'll have definite patterns, and that's what they want is duplicatable stuff. Yeah. And if it's on paper, then they'll probably find another excuse why it's not going to be, you know, good enough or whatever. But that was some stuff. I mean, and you mentioned the feline beings. I mean, I've got these synchronicities where this stuff starts to happen. Like suddenly I had all these light language people coming to me, and it was just like bizarre, like one after another. And we did, I had an assistant. She had a session with a psychic, and this, suddenly this person starts doing this light language and changes halfway through into another, language, two different languages. And she's, she has, hearing deficit, almost like total. So she really didn't pick up on the fact there's two languages. Then I go on a radio show a week later, and suddenly the Misha Johnson, I don't know if you know Misha Johnson, she starts talking in light language to me, and I'm going, what the heck? And I've got six. We're going to do a panel, and I came across a girl who started with the felines, and she said there's 6,000 of them that put on Earth. She's, when they were young kids, trained, and they tell the same story. So they talk about the kids in a circle, and there's a being, there's somebody teaching them stuff, and they sit in a circle. I go, I heard that story before. I heard it in yeah. Phoenix. People telling this story and how they come down, and then she starts the light language, and she's singing it. And then another woman, and within about a month, and I'm going, and I talked to Mary Rodwell. Mary Rodwell's got all the 7, 8, 9-year-old kids, and I'm going, yeah. This is weird. It's like suddenly it's like they want me to do the light language story. So we started going down that road, and then I had another, within a week, I had another interview we were about to do in Toronto, the felines again. And I'm going like, wow, because I knew you had that experience, and you had actually on tape, you had them on tape. And I'm going, wow, this is pretty cool. So we're going to do this one, and the light language again is involved. And I remember, because I was in 75, and I always say to people in the field, if you think what is going on now is going on in 75, give your head a shake. It was a completely different world. I was there. That was the year Travis Walton was taken. There was no talk about abductions, missing time, Grays, Roswell, none of that stuff. Crop circles weren't around. Cattle mutilations, there was one or two or whatever. And then you see these patterns coming. And then suddenly there's reptilians coming in. And then there's crop circles coming in. And then suddenly the light language people come in, and I'm saying to people, like, where did this come from? This was not around when I started. The same as when I started, there was ground traces. So the it would be a burnt out spot, and there'd be the tripods, like at Rendlesham Forest.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. It hasn't happened for 20 years. There would be angel hair. It would fly along, and all this angel hair would come falling down like spider webs. That hasn't happened in 30 years. It's almost like the intelligence, whatever it is turning the pages of a book, and is do this now, do this now, do this now, and they're just turning the pages of a book. I even give a lecture called The Theory of Wow, where I think that basically they may not be doing anything except making us go, wow, like why do UFOs have lights on them? They don't need the lights on them. They have because they want you to go, wow, what is that? Or why do they put marks on people's bodies? They don't have to put marks on people's bodies, triangles. It's like so that you, or put the person's socks on backwards. Or there's even, I'll give you another example. There's a lot of people, there's a guy in Winnipeg here who has these orbs. He had one that actually healed him. He had this cancer operation, he was about to go in, and this orb, he films it coming into his body. And he told me the story. He said, lots of times I wake up with my shirt inside out and backwards. So people always say, well, the aliens are so stupid. They can't even get your clothes on, right? There's a guy, his name is David Thompson. He's one of the top physical mediums in the world. He's actually coming to the States at the end of this year. And he has a cardigan sweater. And they actually strap him down into the chair when he does this media, this seance thing. And he has a cardigan sweater, and they actually tie strap the sweater. And because when the seance is over, his sweater is backwards, inside out and backwards. And so and it's the same story, but this is the same story of that the aliens, and it's almost like, and they believe the same thing, that the spirits that are interacting are saying, watch us do this. Wait, try to figure this one out. And it's like they're showing off, or like the Nimitz thing. The Nimitz, the craft is sitting there, hovers for a week, and it's waiting. Come on and chase us. Come on and chase us. And finally, they send the F-18s out to chase the thing. And the thing drops from 80,000 feet down to a couple feet off the ground in 7/8 of a second. Now, is that something they have to do? No. They're showing off. They're going, what's this? And everybody's going, whoa. And that's what they're doing, is they're just awakening us little by little. Because they can't come directly to you and say, this is the way it is. Because you're going to go, like, get out of here. Get lost. I mean, you know, because that's the way we do it. We go and we say, we're going to bring you freedom, democracy, Jesus, and McDonald's. And everybody says, get out of here and try to shoot us and, you know, get out of our country and stuff like that. And they're doing it indirectly. They make you believe that you made the discovery. Everybody's bought in, almost like in the UFO field. People would say, oh, the guy quit. I go, nah, the guy didn't quit. He'll be back. Nobody quits. I mean, you get down the rabbit hole and you can't get out. And it's this thing where you and I are carrying the message, and it's just little by little. We drop another, you know, a little stone in the water, and it just gets more and more and more, almost like, you know, whether it's gays or whether it's African-American rights or whatever. There's a lot of bad stories, a lot of bad press for those people during their time. And eventually, everybody's talking about it, and people make the right decision. They go, yeah, I knew it. I knew UFOs existed. I knew the government was doing it. And that's what I think they're doing, is basically raising the consciousness and awakening more people. And that's where you see this stuff where suddenly the light language is coming in. I'm going, like, I've been around a long time and I've never seen this. And suddenly they're all coming to me, and it's like, you got to do this story. And I get these synchronicities where I get a ports and manifestations, where I got on this story of ports and I'm doing a book on it. A ports and manifestation, and suddenly, like, there was a collection at my university. I couldn't believe it. Of these things that appear drop out of the sky, and with these around psychics and mediums and UFO people have them all the time. And so I just sort of follow the synchronicities. I get so many synchronicities. And so I go down this subject. And I know when there's a synchronicity, I know you got to go down there. And right now it's this thing with the spirit world, the connection to the spirit world, and this thing with the feline beings and this light language thing that is just like in the last 2 months, it's just consuming, just piles and piles of people coming to me, almost like they've been told, go and talk to this guy.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, from my understanding of it, is that we have to rise to the occasion, because we have to rise in consciousness to deal with very spiritually and technologically advanced beings. And, yeah. You know, a lot of people go, you know, the government's lying to us. I don't think the government even knows what's going on. Exactly. They know they're real. They know the ships are real, but they haven't risen to in consciousness to really understand the phenomenon, yeah. The big picture.
Sure.
And I've also seen, too, that most of the field of the ufology field, there's a controlled narrative, you know, and the controlled narrative is to keep it in the past, you know, keep it nuts and bolts, keep it far, far away. Don't bring in the consciousness, and, you know, don't admit that they've been around for 500,000 years,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or, you know, let's just keep everything in the past far away and keep it scary. Yeah.
But the problem with it is that the consciousness thing doesn't make money. So if you're the government, you want to develop weapons, you want to develop patents, so they're all into this technology thing. And I know, like, Hal Puthoff actually did a lecture a couple months back, and they asked him the question, is TTSA working on consciousness? Because if you remember the story, when Tom DeLonge went to Lockheed Skunk Works, he was talking, and he had the two guys, and then Robert Weiss comes into the room, and he's in this skiff. And he said, the head scientist says to him, so how does it work? I just want to know, how did they get here? How does it work? And then he says, that's pretty good. What else? He said, I think consciousness is involved. He said, as soon as he said consciousness, and he got that from Greer, because he was around Greer, and then he got rid of Greer, and he went to the, you know, these effing ankle biters, we got to destroy them, and they may not have souls, and he goes down that, you know, dark road. And he said, once he said consciousness, the head scientist at Lockheed Skunk Works says, now you're talking. And he said he couldn't shut the guy up. All the guy wanted to talk about for 45 minutes was consciousness. And yet when you talk to Hal, when Hal Puthoff was asked the question a couple of months ago, is TTSA working on consciousness? He said, no, they're not. And it's the old DI. I think there was even a contactee that had this message from the beings that as long as they're talking nuts and bolts and technology, they are in a trap. They will never, ever get anywhere. They have no idea. And that's what you say. And I believe the same thing. They know, yeah, UFOs exist. Even Eric Davis says, and also Kid Green says, that they've had technology, and they've had bodies. They've had at least one body, and they've had crafts, but they can't. They have no idea what to do with it because it's all consciousness related. That's when I go with the thing where I tell people, I had a 747 airline pilot out of San Francisco. I had an F-16 retired U.S. Air Force colonel from L.A., and I've talked to all these people. I got 50 people, and I've got them on tape. And they say, have I flown the craft? They say, okay, how do you fly the craft? Everybody's, not one person has said anything different. And most of them are women. They'll say, I go in the ship. There's people behind me. I don't know if they're beings. I don't know if they're humans. There's just somebody behind me. And they say, go ahead and do it. And then like the F-16 guy says, I don't know what to do. And they say, you know what to do. Or they'll say, it's within you. You know what to do. Go and do it. And he says, I go, and there's this panel. And I put my hands on the panel. And he said it was like F-16 suction cups. And he's sitting there, and he said, he becomes one with the craft. The craft is alive. You become one with the craft, and whatever you think is what the craft does. I just interviewed the guy last night. He was talking about it. And they said, what would you like to do? And he said, I would like to see the Milky Way from a distance. And they said, put your hands on this thing, put your fingers in. And he says, the chair was built for him. And he's sitting there, and then he said, it's going to be very intense gravity for G-force for 1 second. And he said, it was just absolutely intense. And he said, the window was there, and he said suddenly he's looking, and the Milky Way was in the galaxy, and he was out in the middle of outer space in a second. And he said it was like going through pages. As they're going through the dimensions, the pages are turning. And everybody says the same thing. Nobody has ever said there's a steering wheel. Even Cat Stevens, the famous musician, who was an experiencer, said, he wrote a song called Freezing Steel. I was on the ship of freezing steel, the ship without the guiding wheel. There is no guiding wheel. It is all consciousness. And until they realize that it's a consciousness connection, and that the inside is 10 times larger than the outside, there's no way we have that technology. Nobody's going to convince me we have that technology. They may be working on jet fighters trying to move it with your mind or whatever, but it's so far beyond. And that's why the story I heard was 89, they shut the whole program down because they had no idea what to do. And they're still doing this whole thing where, you know, we can get anti-gravity and stuff. And you see this piece that Linda Howe sold for $35,000, this little piece, and they're talking about levitating this piece. I said, if they're talking about levitating a piece this big, they got nothing. And these are the top physicists fighting about this. They have absolutely, because it's a consciousness technology, and people have to realize that craft is alive. It's all done with the mind, and it's way beyond anything we've got.
You know, it's so funny because, you know, we've had fearless energy, anti-gravity, counter-gravity. We've been able to jump dimensions. We have all that technology in the Skunk Works things. And I know people within there that worked on those technologies and that actually have that technology right now. They can't get it out yet. We tried to bring it out in the 90s, and they had their labs blown up, and we're all threatened, you know, at gunpoint. It was really a mess. But, you know, we've had all that technology. But I'm just seeing over and over, until we rise in consciousness, that this technology interfaces with consciousness. And so there's no purposeful good in trying to explain this to some people and trying to share this with people, because they can't comprehend it.
They have no idea.
Yeah, I agree. They have in consciousness. And, you know, when I have people attack me, I just say, you know, well, thank you for establishing your ignorance and your character, you know.
That's true. Yeah,
that's it. Say, you know, and I go, you're assuming that, you know, I need your acceptance or approval. You have some power over me. And I said, those are two assumptions that are going to get you in trouble. But I said, because I don't care if you believe me or not.
Yeah,
I want to learn something, come out and check it out, you know.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's pointless to try to convince, because you even take a look at the situation with your government there. You have half the Congress and the Senate where they both hear the same speech. And they hear exactly the opposite thing, and they sit there, and they're totally at odds. And that should give people the idea that you can't recruit somebody, you can't convince somebody. It comes through experience. And that was one of the things I got with the difference between believing and knowing. Because the scientific community will play the game, I know and you just believe. Like experiences, they just believe, they think. And I go, no, it's all belief or memory. Like, where do you, they say memory's bad. I say, well, where do you think the words that are coming out of your mouth right now are coming from? That's memory. You learned it as a 4 or 5 year old kid. All the ideas in your head came from science Sunday school or from school or from your parents or whatever. It's all memory and it's all belief. And they sort of think, well, no, we're independent. We know. And that was the thing that I got in this noetic thing, knowing the difference between believing and knowing, that it's all belief. And the closest thing you can get to knowing is to have the experience. If you haven't had the experience, it's totally a waste of time to talk to those people. You might as well just, you know, as you said, just say thank you and move on, because you're not going to convince them. Everybody has their belief system and they think they know, but it's as rigid as a belief system as any religious belief system in the world, and they're not going to change it, because until they have the experience, until they get hit over the head and somebody pulls them into a field or they have a near-death experience, and same with me. I say, if I had any experiences I had, I'd be just as stupid as the rest of them. But I had these very bizarre, dramatic experiences that pulled me, and maybe I intended those experiences. But I'm telling you, like all my friends, I had 100 people. I used to take tours out to see these objects on the ground and up in the air and stuff like that. And all my friends, without reservation, all went on with their life. I fell off the edge of the earth. And I say, there must be a reason for that. It affected me different than anybody else. The same as I had the download experience with Colin Andrews. When I had this experience, I can remember exactly where I was, exactly how it was. And it changed my life. The way I run my life is, you sit there and you go by inner feeling, you wait for a synchronicity, for a vision or whatever, and you make the turn. When something happens, you make the turn and you just follow your feeling, you follow your gut feeling. And try not to really figure stuff out, that you will be given the answers. And I've done more in the last 5 years than in my other 40 years of my career, by far.
We've had so many people. I mean, we've had triple PhD Boeing engineers up here, and Lockheed Skunk Works people, everybody, and they've come and they've seen the ships. And we showed them video of these ships morphing from 1 to 4 and back to 1 again, doing things that are just beyond any physics that we know. And, you know, you show them all these things and then they'll come out there. And one guy's saying, well, you know, this one was going by. He goes, that's a satellite. And I go, well, we have the tracer, we have Heavens Above right here. It's not a satellite. He goes, well, I'll believe it when it stops and goes back the other way. Well, the ship stopped and it went back the other way. And I told him, I said, they totally know your thoughts. These guys are extremely telepathic. They know your thoughts. And how do you think we know when they're going to appear in the sky? Yep. I said, and they're doing dazzle duty. They're doing this to get you to realize there's more going on than what you've been taught in college, which really have no courses in ufology or that I know of. They might have some now, but, you know, these guys, I go, well, what do they teach you about UFOs in college? And they said, they don't. They teach us they don't exist. And I said, well, there you go. There's your foundation right there. You know, it just got shattered.
But they can always fall back on their thing that, you know, that because belief is a strong thing, even scientific belief. That's where I used to say, people would say, you know, I wrote an article called The 64 Reasons They Decided Not to Tell You the Truth. And then we were looking at Greer saying the stock market would melt down, people jump off bridges, the religious people. And one of the ones I had, and I think it's very serious, is the people that are going to be affected the worst are going to be scientists. Where suddenly you've got a PhD, you've been going to school for 20 years, and suddenly everything you believe is wrong. And it's just not going to go. I mean, that's way worse than a religious belief, because they're so bought into this. And, you know, they've written the papers and you have to appease the community where, you know, the National Academy of Sciences, where only 4% believe there's paranormal phenomena, 6% believe in God. I mean, you go against that kind of structure where you're going to say, okay, you know, I believe this is going on, whatever. Your career is over. You do not have a job. You see, you know, Mac, where first time at Harvard tried to pull someone's tenure. I mean, it's a dangerous position to be a scientist and to step over that line. And I think that's the big thing that's really stopping it, is the scientists, even though they may believe, cannot make the move, because it's so structured and so dominated by industries that want weapons, they want material things, they don't want anything consciousness, they don't want anything outside. It's like, we want money, we want technology, we want it yesterday, and there's good and bad people, and you're into this sort of duality stuff all the time. And so I think the scientists are the ones that are going to be worst affected when it does become a reality that there is this stuff. And that's why I say to people, after 45 years, I will say this. Whatever this is, it's a lot less physical than you think it is. It's a lot more spiritual than you think it is. And a lot of people aren't going to like that. They're just going to be really upset that that turns out to be the case. Because we want the thing where, you know, we want the house and the two cars, and we want the technology and stuff like that. And that's what the world is dominated by right now, is this material paradigm.
Yeah, I agree. It's really sad because, you know, people, their lives, basically, they, you know, they go to work, they sit in a little cubicle, they crunch the numbers, you know, and move things around. And then they go home and turn their TV on and get beer, pizza, and watch CNN, you know, which is total mind control.
Living lives of quiet desperation. Yeah, that's what we call it.
Yeah, and I go, you know, well, I said, well, what established your beliefs? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, where do you get your information from that establishes your beliefs? And they go, well, I watch, you know, I go, do you do your own research? Do you go out and check these places out where things are happening? Do you search thoughts of higher consciousness and energy? I said, you know, even the word believe has a lie in the middle of it. So you got to let that one go. And I said, if you want to expand your horizons or your consciousness, you got to step out of the box, especially the box that you're in now. And when you finally step out of the box, you're going to go, oh my God, I've been in this monkey trap for God knows how long. And there's no joy. There's no love in it. There's no expansion. And it's just another controlled narrative. You know, it's just a program.
Yeah. I feel sorry for them, but I do have empathy for them, because I firmly believe that if I hadn't had the experiences I had, I would probably be in the same boat. It's your experiences that really change you when you have, you know, when you had the near-death experiences, I had the UFO sighting, and then I had these two sort of really dramatic awakenings with these noetic experiences that come with absolute certainty. And I would explain to people the fact that when you have a noetic experience, it comes with absolute certainty, you know. And like I would ask these people, and I've had a number of them, people who said, I knew the answer to everything in the universe at one point during my experience. And I'd say, okay, so how long did that last? They said, as soon as I started coming back, it started to fade like a dream. And I said, no, I'm going to remember this. I'm going to remember this. And then I would say to them, well, how do you know there was something on the far side of the galaxy, like number 567 they forgot to tell you about? And they would say exactly what I would say about my noetic experience. They'd say, I really don't know, but I just know that I knew everything. And it's that knowing thing that's so hard to explain to people. It's not like a good idea. It's this idea where you actually get told something, you go, oh, and it stays with you, and you can remember where you were, what the weather was like, every little detail. And so I feel sorry for people who had those kind of experiences where they're just sort of like just bouncing from one thing to another. And it may be another lifetime where they wake up and they get brought in, that they're really not ready at this point to may have that experience. And so the onus is on you and I, because, you know, as the Bible says, too much is given, much is expected. That when I'm a Newton guy, so I believe that when you die, all they say is, how did it work out? And you can't say, you know, if Hillary Clinton hadn't done her emails and the dog ate my homework and all these excuses, they're going to go, time out, this is about you. You agreed to do something. And so to whom much is given, much is expected. Or Edgar Casey said, knowledge not used is sin. So I always feel the onus is on me, that if I know there's no excuse for me not doing something, I can forgive those people because they're living, you know, trying to pay their bills and take their kid to soccer practice, whatever. But you and I know. And so we have an onus to do something with what we know.
I know. I was meditating one time and Babaji came in and he said, he told me to stop watering seedlings with a fire hose.
You know? That's a good one.
I was just like, kids are hitting people with everything. And I'd watch them blank over and their eyes would get all glassy. And I go, whoa, what is going on here? I go, their off switch just went off, you know? It was pretty hilarious watching that. But I think now's the time just for people need to speak out and speak up and challenge the narrative. Especially this controlled narrative, it's in everything. It's in religion, it's in ufology, it's in spirituality. Yeah. You know, it's all there until we have to challenge that narrative continuously if we are going to get behind, you know, these controls.
That's why I always say, like, whether it's African-American rights or gay rights, or I volunteer at a Ronald McDonald House, and, you know, kids who have cancer at 4 years old, that's a tough problem too. But they still have to fight it. It's not like because it's a good idea, everybody's going to shut down and go along with it. that we have to do our work. If we believe it's a legitimate thing that people should know about, it's up to us. It's not because it's a good idea, childhood cancer, that everybody's going to pack up and agree with us, that it still requires the work. And when we go through the work and push it hard enough, the consciousness will rise and it'll move, but not until we do it. We can't expect the people who don't know what's going on to help raise consciousness. We're the ones that have to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, these kids, if you give them the tools, they'll heal themselves. Yeah. You know, you just say, visualize a little Pac-Man going in there and eating the cancer, and all of a sudden it's gone. You know, there's also technology I'm aware of that if you super oxygenate the blood, and there's actually oxygen water with the crystallized oxygen and raise the body pH, cancer can't exist. There's so many things out there. Otto Warburg gave us that in 1929, you know, the cure for cancer, but we're doing everything opposite to create cancer. Diet, food, everything, you know. Even the frequencies we're exposing ourselves to. So I guess it's all about education in the long run. You know, we just have to educate the people and say, you know, it's time to question everything, you know, and if it's not working, try something different.
Yeah. It's our job to do. That's my point, is that you can't expect anybody else to do it. Where if we know, it's up to us to speak out and not be afraid of what people are going to think, because every major, you know, social political movement, whether it's Gandhi or whatever, I mean, it's not like everybody said, okay, we're on board. I mean, they all were fighting the headwinds all the time. No matter what, if you're on the front edge of the story, you're always going to have a rough ride. It's not like something gets accepted easily.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, that the closer you get to nirvana, the more the demons rear their ugly heads. So, you know, and you know, if you got chaos in your life, it's a good thing, because it's creating change. You know, and you know, I know a lot of people that are really awake, and I ask them, but they said, yeah, when I started out, I had friends everywhere. I had millions of friends. I was at every party. Everybody knew me. And they go, now I can count my friends on my fingers. And they go, wait a second, on one hand, wait. Got three, you know. I actually have three people I can actually confide in and talk to now, you know, because they've stepped outside the normal box or whatever.
Although you do get friends inside the community, that's where you see in conferences where people get together, and it's like huggy and kissy and stuff like that, because this is actually their family. Because, and people will come to me all the time, experiences, and say, it's terrible, my husband and wife, and nobody believes me, whatever. And I say, get used to it. That is almost like it's the pattern that you actually place this in your path to keep you grounded or whatever it is, because there's almost nobody who has support from their family. And so when they come and whine, I say, that's the way it is. Get used to it.
I was really lucky because my dad was like a walking yogi. He was like a
amazing,
and he was raised in New Mexico, and he would he had ship land right in front of the highway, right in front of him, and he got out and they had missing time and all that kind of stuff. And he'd be driving down the road and he'd say, get out of the car, and we get out and we go look up, and there'd be five ships right over the house. You know, as a kid, but he never talked about it to other people, but he would show us that, you know, that it's a much bigger world than you can imagine. And we were raised in the high desert, and we saw ships all the time, constantly. We'd sleep outside. And so, you know, I just, all my life, I find it hard to believe that somebody wouldn't believe. And ship, you know, but a lot of people just don't get out. They don't get out. They don't look up. They don't, you know, do their thing. We're hitting the end of the hour right now. So, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you to get a hold of your books or your latest works that you're doing?
Well, my website is beyondpresidentialufo.com. Although I don't go there that much. Most of my new research, I have Grant Cameron White House UFO YouTube. That's where I put my interviews. And I will sometimes go on there and talk about my discoveries and stuff like that. That's the main one. Or if they want to actually contact me directly, they can contact me at whitehouseufo@gmail.com. And I usually, especially a lot of people who have problems or experiencers or whatever, or they have, you know, light language, they hear I'm working on this kind of stuff. So that's basically how to contact me. In the books, they get on Amazon, although I don't really push the books anymore, because a lot of people don't read books. That's another thing, that people have stopped reading books. And I realized, and that was convinced me. I have some young girls who work for me, and they convinced me, you got to go on to YouTube. That's where people are. You got to keep the thing short and all this kind of stuff, because I'm an older guy. And, you know, when you suddenly get a YouTube that hits 100,000 hits or something, you realize you're talking to stadiums full of people. And whereas a book, you're going to sell a few. I write the books just to sort of get it clear in my mind where I put it all. It's almost like doing a PowerPoint where you understand it a lot better when you write it down, but I don't really intend to sell many books. It's the trying to get across the visual message. The way people are getting their news now is through YouTube and through Facebook. So that's usually what I use.
Great. And what's your channel?
It's Grant Cameron White House UFO.
All right. We'll have all that underneath the...
Yeah. Beautiful. Once again, I appreciate your interest in what I'm doing. And I think we're sort of on the same page. We're heading down the same enlightened path, but we have the same headwinds, I think. And so I understand where you're coming from in terms of what you're doing.
Yeah. What's really neat about here is that they can try to debunk this and everything else, but the problem is it's still happening. We just heard 3 days ago, for 3 days in a row, we just filmed the most amazing ships out there, and it just doesn't quit. And so it really messes them up, when they try to shut this thing down because they can't. But anyway, I can't thank you again for coming on the show, and keep up the work you're doing, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure.
All right. James Gillen signing off. Have a great evening. Keep an open mind and pure intent and a loving heart, and get outside. Get out in nature and look up. You're going to start seeing some amazing things. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.